Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Hey, good morning to my caregiver nation and my friends with diagnosis. I think I put together a show today you're really going to enjoy. Recently, I was at a training seminar with a renowned Alzheimer's and dementia educator, and it kind of struck me that through this course that I was listening to, the person that was talking was basically saying that people with Alzheimer's have a tendency to just have no filter on their mouth. They curse a lot and things like that. And to be honest with you, in all the years I've been working with people that have any type of dementia, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, Alzheimer's, hippocampal sclerosis, I haven't really experienced that as a whole. So today I thought, wouldn't it be fun if I could go back through some of the in-home assessments that I have facilitated and just take some of the quotes from the people living with these different types of dementia and talk to you about some of the things that they're saying about how they feel about the disease. So I think I just kind of want to dive into it, but I also will do a little recap on what Alzheimer's is. I won't do that on Parkinson's and some other things, but I want to just dive in and talk about these things. So first of all, I want to start by there is no us and them. We are all in this together, okay? And just because a person has a type of dementia doesn't make them immune to being hurt by the absence of common courtesy or by the lack of sympathy or empathy regarding what it means and how it feels to be unable to recall events, even to, you know, sign our names or to tie our shoelaces, that kind of thing. So having said that, gosh, I tell you, I'm having a few computer problems here this morning. Bear with me. When a patient gets respectful and social support and educated understanding by caregivers, people with Alzheimer's and other dementias are able to flourish far beyond what we might otherwise expect of them from a medical point of view and far beyond the expectations created by the negative stereotypes, I think perpetuated really by mass media, but also training classes. So I kind of wanted to get into that. So let's just talk about fundamentally, what is Alzheimer's? This disease is a progressive degenerative brain disorder, and it occurs gradually and results in profound memory loss, changes in behavior and reactions, thinking and reasoning, and a significant decline in overall functioning and ability. And these losses result from the death of nerve cells in the brain, we call those neurons, and the breakdown of the connections between those neurons we call synapses. And those enable the brain to transmit messages. So what happens is we've discovered that large numbers of neurofibrillary fiber tangles and neuritic plaques are responsible for destroying those brain cells. And the tangles are consisted of mass intertwined filaments of the tau protein that I've talked about many, many times on this show that my mom had a little bit more of than anything else. And the plaques are composed of the amyloid protein that many of you know about and think about when you're talking about Alzheimer's. And those sit outside the amyloid plaque cells, becoming the depository of decayed nerve endings, okay? So those are the hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease. Now, having said that, there are many other pathological and neurological dimensions of these diseases that scientists are looking at and how they define Alzheimer's and so forth. But I want to define it to you today by talking to you about people with what people with the disease are actually saying, okay? And it might hold some clarification for those of you who are caregivers who wonder, you know, what are the beginning stages of these diseases? What are some of the things that we could note as being something that gives us a clue something's going wrong? So I'm just going to just dive in here. So I had a lady on an assessment tell me that she was driving into town to get her hair done. And she said, I was supposed to make a left turn, but instead I went straight right into oncoming traffic. A policeman pulled me over and I told him that I didn't know why I did it. I had driven the same route all along and never had any problems. It was so strange and it was so scary. I really could have hurt someone. That was the first time I knew that there was something wrong. I thought that was really honest, because even when people with Alzheimer's are self-aware, the medical community seems to assume that they have little insight into their own condition. And oftentimes that results in people being treated in less than compassionate ways. And it leaves people feeling dehumanized by the doctors evaluating them. And they feel like they've been reduced to a set of symptoms classifying them into a diagnostic category. And they don't really want to do that, right? Not just doctors, but just people in general. And so wouldn't it be nice if we just simply added an invaluable phrase to people to tell them you are not alone? Like the police officer who was very kind to this woman when she drove the wrong way in traffic. It seems kind of trite, but it's often really absent from the way we work with people. So here's another thing somebody told me on an assessment. She said, setting the washing machine is getting to be a problem. Sometimes I'll spend an hour trying to figure out how to set it. I can start it out with a bang, but by the last load, I am totally confused. And then I leave the clothes in the washer and they get wrinkled and I have to start all over again. So I thought it might be just really interesting for you to hear some of these things people say. Here's another one. This gentleman said, it seems like my caregiver has to do too much and I can't do anything about it. He has to do all the cooking. He fixes all the meals. I can make the salads at the table and do what I can to help. We used to do a lot of entertaining and I take pride in setting a nice table, but now I don't even know which side the fork or knife is supposed to go on. I'll get the plates on and then I'll get the silverware. And then I'll ask my brother Joe, hey, where do these go? He'll show me, but then I don't remember the next second. The simplest things that I've done before, I can no longer do. Sometimes I can do them, though, and sometimes I can't. And then when I can't, I think he wonders if I'm just pulling all of this off, trying to manipulate him. That's kind of sad. You know, I really wanted to point that out because the fluctuation in abilities is really confusing to both those affected and their friends and families. And those inconsistencies really make that person seem like they're, you know, more demented or less useful. And that's really not the case. And they also attribute to people thinking inaccurately that it's laziness or lack of concentration or unwillingness or just a farce. This day-to-day variability is common with Alzheimer's and other types of dementia, but it can also contribute to the feelings of disbelief so pervasive in the earlier stages that family members often wonder, am I being taken for a ride? I don't really think so. I really don't. So something I've never talked on the show about is visual agnosia, and it is super perplexing with the symptoms of Alzheimer's. And it's because the person's visual acuity is good and they can see, but through the disease, they lose the ability to recognize or identify what they just saw. So they could look directly at the knife, like that gentleman did, and see it clearly, but not be able to decipher its meaning. So agnosia is combined with the more common problems of impaired depth and spatial perception. I want to get into what people can see and what they cannot see and hear from the people themselves through these quotes that I have today. So when we come back from our break, we're going to get into more and more about why this is affecting the people with Alzheimer's and how it affects their caregivers.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, so today I'm talking about different things that people with Alzheimer's and other types of dementia and memory loss, like Parkinson's disease, Lewy body, and so forth, have told me about how they feel about their disease, how they feel about people caring for them, and so forth. So before we went to break, I was talking about agnosia. And agnosia is a symptom where the person has issues with spatial depth, how far away something is, or does the item they're looking at look like what they think they're looking at. I hope that makes sense to you. I'll try to make it a little bit more clear in the quotes I give you here. But as an example, it causes the brain to not be able to affect the or judge the distance of something like a step. I'll give you an example. I have a client named Jim who fell down some steps recently. And when I was at the home doing the in-home assessment for the second time in 2 years, I noted that the concrete stairs really looked like they were all the same color. So I said to the family, you should put some painter's tape, blue tape or something like that, at the edge of that stair because I can see just fine. I don't have any cognitive impairment, but that stair did not look like it went down. It just looked like a large continuum of concrete. So those kinds of things happen. That's why people fall. It's also why people with different types of cognitive impairment and memory loss will reach for something and their hand will fall far short of where that object is, like a cup or a glass, or maybe even putting a cup on a table. They'll miss the table and it'll fall and they'll spill it. That's why those kinds of things happen. So we call that agnosia. So one thing that is frustrating to people with memory loss and their caregivers is when they lose something. So one of my folks told me that she finds it very frustrating when she goes back to look for something that she placed somewhere and she can't find it, right? And she says she knows she probably moved it, but she gets aggravated because she can't find it. And she thinks she should just forget about it. She says, sometimes I think it's just going to make me crazy. But then when I look for something, I find out it's lying right in front of me and I won't even see it. So my daughter will say, well, Mom, there's that pearl necklace. It's right there. Can't you see it? But if it's on a white table, she can't see it. Or she just doesn't recognize what it is. So she said, I don't always misplace things. Sometimes it's right there. I just don't recognize them. And so things like that are really, really hard for people. And it's even harder for their caregivers to understand. So as an example, the association to the actual item can get really gray. Like a bread box and a jewelry box can seem like one and the same. So pearls, her pearl necklace, may end up in the pantry. That's why she can't find it, right? And sometimes you just get really harried when you're looking for something, she would tell me, and she just can't find it just basically because she's so stressed out looking for the object and she can't identify it. So she said, even if somebody said, how would you describe the necklace? She'd say, well, it's got small, beads strung together, but she can't come up with the word of their pearls. Okay. It's her pearl necklace. Another thing that happens a lot is people will tell me that they can't handle their money once they get progressed in this disease, and even in the early stages. So a woman told me, she said, I can't even identify the money in my pocketbook. I don't know what's a dollar. I don't know what's a $10 bill. I don't know what's a $100 bill. And worse yet, she can't recognize the coins. She doesn't recognize the difference between a quarter and a dime. And she said her mathematical calculations have become nearly impossible. So, you know, we don't think about these kinds of things when we're talking to someone and we're saying, hey, you know, we need to do your checkbooks now because you can't do them. We're kind of abrupt with them and they feel like we're just sort of butting in and taking over and it doesn't feel good to them, you know. But they also do realize they can't judge money. They can't balance their checkbook anymore. But it doesn't mean they want somebody coming in gangbusters trying to take over, you know? So how do we figure that all out? So another thing that happens are the with the visual issues of agnosia, one of my clients told me that when she goes to church and people try to shake her hand or give her a hug, because of her visual and spatial problems, she's unable to respond. So she'll just stand there. So she says sometimes she can't locate the greeter's hand accurately in the spatial realm and it becomes really uncomfortable. So she says as a result, the common misperception that she had become more impaired and that's why she can't shake that person's hand is unfair. But she said, I can't reach my hand out because I'm going to miss you. Because I can't see where you are. And she said she knows the rules. She just can't comply with them. Just give somebody a hug. Just give somebody a handshake. So we don't think about those kinds of things when we're working with somebody. We don't even think about it when we're talking to somebody. We just figure, well, they're really impaired. And we're just going to have to start doing more things for them. Instead of just maybe taking their hand in a way that is comfortable to them. As opposed to reaching out a hand and expecting them to reach towards you. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if we don't get on board with these folks, what's going to happen is they're going to feel like they're isolated, they're lonely, that they can't go out because they're going to embarrass themselves. And when that happens, their loved one that is caring for them, their spouse or whoever, won't go out either. And that puts everybody at a risk for becoming isolated. And we certainly don't want that to happen, right? So another thing, a person said, I still have trouble getting dressed, so I don't do it myself anymore. I have a girl who comes in and does it for me, and it's a relief. She comes in every morning and gets the shower going and takes care of the rest of it too. I feel so helpless, but I can't do anything about it. And we knew that I needed to have some help. The girl is precious. She's really sweet. She dresses me. And if she's not there, my husband can do it, but it's a hassle. I don't know what to do, and he doesn't know how to do it. So neither of us end up doing anything. I think maybe I should just join a nudist colony. I thought that was really adorable. Listen, we'll be right back, and we'll have more of this discussion.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders. We are passionate that people with dementias such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, So today I'm talking about the people that I have facilitated in-home assessments with, and just different things that they told me about what it's like to live with their different types of cognitive impairment and different dementias. And I think it's really important to stress, this doesn't start just overnight and then you move fast forward to late stage. You can go many, many years in the early stage. You can go many, many years in the mid stage. And if you take the time to talk with these folks, they will give you great insight into what is going on for them. Okay. So I thought I would just share a few of these different quotes that people have told me. Here's one. A lady said, "I never in my life dreamed that I would have trouble getting dressed because I was so used to doing it. Now sometimes I put my nightgown on backwards. But I don't let that bother me. I can sleep with that on the right side or the wrong side. Just let me get into bed. I like my sleep." She also said, "I can feed myself to a point, but I have a hard time identifying the food. I can see it, but I can't tell what it is. So it's a hassle. Today, my caregiver was running with the chocolate ice cream and helping me to put it in my mouth, and he spilled it all over me. We try to find amusement in my disability." I think that's a good way to just be resilient and say, hey, it is what it is. I'm going to just keep getting better. It's a difficult situation. I'm going to try to be happy. That kind of thing. So, people out there, don't take it too seriously if you spill food on yourself or if your loved one does. It's that spatial issue I was talking about. Okay. There was a guy who was a journalist, and he went all around the country and around the world writing articles for a magazine. And he said the first time he noticed his increased cognition impairment was on a business trip, and he was talking to colleagues and he became completely tongue-tied. He said it was so sudden and embarrassing. He said, "I was hardly able to show them around because of my lapses in memory. Problems continued for most of their stay. It didn't surface again until several more years when I was in India. And I started to slip a tape recorder in the staff meetings because I couldn't take notes or remember. This was also about the time that my spelling went wonky, so I bought a pocket speller." he said when his wife and sister asked him to get checked out by a doctor, he was angry. And he was angry at the doctor, too. And he said, "I felt like I'd been turned in against my will for having Alzheimer's. We'd been planning to retire in 3 or 4 years. And all of a sudden, at age 54, it seemed like I was labeled incompetent after a lifetime of proficiency." So I think that's really well said. I think people feel like, gosh, all of a sudden I'm plugging along on all cylinders and everything's going great. And the next thing you know, I have a few cognitive issues and they build over a couple of years. I have trouble talking. I have trouble remembering people's names. I have trouble with driving and things like that. And the next thing you know, I'm labeled as a deficient person. And that's painful and it's hard to deal with. Here's a person that really had a good hold on resiliency. And she said that she likes to do calisthenics and discuss the news of the day with her caregiver. She said she plays tennis 2 times a week and she tries to write on the computer as much as she can. "I watch a lot of TV. It's funny because I always hated television, but now I need it. It helps me because I can understand what I hear as long as a person doesn't speak too quickly. I try to read, but it's very difficult. And the lunacy of this gets to be where sometimes I forget what is on the page and read along the line, but then I go to the next line and I can't find it. It takes so long to find the next line that I forgot what I was on the previous line. So I just pretend like I'm reading it." That's okay. It is okay because it really doesn't matter. Pardon me. On the long run, all we have to do is try to live well and try to just do the things that we can do as best as we can do it. One person said to me in a assessment, "I feel like I'm becoming more childlike. I enjoy the things children enjoy. I don't have the same responsibilities now and I can do what I want. So when I go on walks, I get so excited about a rabbit or some other animal we may see. On one of our walks, there were a lot of snails on the path, and people kept walking on them and stepping on them. So I started picking up the large snails and throwing them in the shrubs to save their lives. This was my only contribution to the world today. I'm not so sure. I think that person has a lot of contributions to the world. I love that. So here's one. I think a lot of people have talked about not being able to talk on the phone with their loved one and why this is so annoying. So this woman says, I don't like talking on the phone. I have a card in my drawer with my name and address and all the stuff on it that I think I need to say to somebody. But then someone will always come up with another question that isn't covered on my paper. And the list gets bigger and bigger. The more rattled I get, the less I can pull out words. So when somebody asks what part of the street I live on or the next question about how I am today, she said, sometimes I just get so stressed out, I put the phone down and walk away. I think that's very, very honest. I just love, love, love these things. I love that people will share how they really feel. I hope this is giving some insight to people today. One woman said she went to the bank and the lady at the teller's booth said, what is your name? And she said, I could not remember my name to save my soul. I got so rattled, I just walked away. She said, the worst thing is it's difficult not to be able to meet somebody else's expectations or even my own. I think that's very poignant. I think that's really true. I think sometimes we just don't realize the little struggles these folks are going through and how to help them through. And if you're out in the public and you're dealing with somebody, say at a bank or a restaurant, be patient. If they don't seem to answer something correctly, they're doing their best and they're trying. It's very scary for people with Alzheimer's and different types of cognitive impairment to be out in the world. Hey, another one that came up was somebody said, I ask my friend the same question over and over and over again. We're always curious about repetitive questions. And she said, I don't do it deliberately. It's just that each time it's like a new idea. Then I realize by her face that it's not new and that we have talked about this more than once. It's a good thing she's patient and doesn't say, you already asked me that. She just gives me the answer again. Maybe after 3 or 4 times, I'll remember. Well, God bless you, girl. I hope that you do remember. And if you don't, that's okay. That's what family and friends are for. Okay? So I think as we acknowledge Alzheimer's and cognitive impairment in our families and with our friends, what we really have to do is try to be compassionate and understand that the bottom line is, what if it were us, right? What if we were the ones that had this disease? How would we want people to treat us? I hope you all have found some of this interesting today. The people with Alzheimer's don't want to hide it. They don't want to stay reclusive in their homes. They get lonely and they need love. So add a touch of love as a person with Alzheimer's relinquishes some control over their life. And also, they're concerned about you being courageous and being nice to them. They don't want to be violated by insensitivity or harmful care. So I think this was a very poignant way to end this. The lady said, if I forget something, I want people to be mild with me. Do what you have to do, but you appreciate a touch of love rather than a touch of hostility. Hostility will cause you to rebel. Treat others as you would like to be treated. You wouldn't like me to be beating on you all the time. So folks, let's be nice to our folks out there. I hope you have gotten a little insight today of what it's like for our family and friends to live with this disease. And I'll have more important information like this for you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.